Next Step episode number 800. That's right, 800. February 22nd, 2025. Take the step with me right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you again to another episode of the Next Step podcast with Father Vazquez. With these podcasts, Father Vazquez provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, it's so good to be back here with you today. Episode number 800. Can you believe that? The year 2025. I waited. I know. It's taken a while to get to this episode. And I wasn't ready to be with you. And I know I got a few people out there that are looking for me. It's nice. It's nice to be wanted. Yes, it's been almost 2 months since we put out our last Next Step. But I got to tell you, for a couple reasons, and I do need to say this, maybe if not for an apology, but at least for myself, at least to document the feelings, I didn't realize. I've been thinking about how to go about what the next step was going to be, especially 800. That's quite a big mile. That's a milestone in itself. You know, we've been doing this podcast every week since 2008, The Next Step. And we slowed down last year when I was blaming it that, you know, every day I was doing a podcast. I am still doing it, the daily Armadoxy for today. It's my daily show, small, 5 minute long. You know, it's an average, about 4 or 5 minutes long. And I thought that's what slowed me down. And I didn't realize until this last couple months when I just didn't feel like getting in front of this microphone and doing this next step. I, in fact, even went through the fires. We were evacuated, and we live very close to the Altadena area. So it impacted us, and it still has impacted us. We've got family that's still living with us at the house. At its heyday, there was maybe about 12 or 13 of us living in the one house, because houses had not burnt down, but they were pretty smoky, and you didn't want to go in there. Had babies. Yeah, got a couple babies here too. So it's been kind of an interesting time, and I could blame it on a lot of things, but it didn't really occur to me until yesterday why emotionally I wasn't ready to do this. And today it hit me, and it's kind of appropriate that it's the 800. By the way, we did record an 800 right after the fires. My brother, whose house had burnt down a couple of years ago, I got together with him, and we talked about some of the do's and don'ts, what you should be looking for. And the timing of it wasn't right. We recorded it. It was ready to go as the 800th. Episode of the Next Step, but I held off. I held off for some reason. I think I figured it out yesterday. So I want to share that with you today. I want to share with you what happened yesterday, what specifically made me realize where I'm at. And I think it'll be interesting, especially when those of you who have been longtime Next Steppers know that this is a very important part of my life. And I appreciate that it's an important part of your life as well. But yesterday, the Montebello is a small town just, let's see, what would it be, southeast of us? We're in Pasadena, which is just northeast, I think, of Los Angeles. Anyway, let's forget about let's forget about the compass directions, okay? We're just a little bit off of Los Angeles, whether it's Pasadena or Montebello. But it's historic site for Armenians because the first ever genocide memorial on public land in the United States. It was built there and finished its construction in 1968. And at that time, the Catholicos of all Armenians, His Holiness Vazgen I, came out and placed two khachkars right on that monument. And that area, which it's in Montebello. Montebello, by the way, means the beautiful mountain, right? And yesterday I had an opportunity to say a prayer at that beautiful mountain, at the monument, and I likened it really more to a sacred or a holy mountain ever since those khachkars got there. And even more, the symbolism of what that monument stands for. It recognizes the 1.5 million Armenians who were slaughtered at the hands of the Turks from 1915 to 1923, what's known as the Armenian Genocide, the first genocide of the 20th century. And as I've said many times, I think, you know, when I look at Next Step, I know that Next Step is kind of built on this genocide platform. What is the next step? If we are the children of genocide, well, what is the next step? Is it enough to just go and protest? And like I said, everything kind of came together yesterday. Yesterday, that monument was designated as a California landmark. In other words, the state of California now recognizes it as a landmark, historic landmark, and so it can't be touched. But deep down, you know what that means, right? In other words, the city of Montebello doesn't necessarily need to upkeep that monument anymore. It goes now on the state of California. And it was kind of interesting because the senator who sponsored the bill, he was there, along with an assortment of politicians and an assortment of clergymen. And our Archbishop Hovnan Sirpazan, he knew that I was there when it opened. One of the few people that has still remained, you know, 1968. I was a 12-year-old kid when the monument first opened. And he is so gracious that he asked me, he says, would you offer a prayer? Well, of course. I was honored. What a privilege. Can you imagine that? And you see, I wasn't only there at the beginning when it was first constructed. My dad was on the committee. There was 18 men on this committee. Yes, men, we could say that today. It was 18 men. There's a plaque that's sitting there on the monument itself. These 18 men. And why do I remember it? I was 12 years old when it was finished. But I remember as a young kid, you know, we were going there on different occasions, April 24th, on different occasions for the groundbreaking. And we were given the assignment of being the gophers, the ones that would go for the money or go for whatever. We were little kids. People couldn't resist us, so we would walk around with little pins. And we had this box that people, we would give them a pin and they put in their donation. And that's how funds were raised. It's a beautiful, like, little, it's a little hilly area in Montebello. It's a park. It's an outdoor park where this monument is. And the monument stands about 75 feet straight up. It's huge. And as a kid, it's even bigger. Yesterday, Professor Hovhannessian's son was there. I think Armin. Yeah, he was there. And he spoke, and he remembered as he was a child. I think he said he was 5, and he remembers the day that Ronald Reagan, at that time the governor of our state, attended and came in a helicopter that landed right on that hill. I mean, it was pretty impressive times. And when you think about the 1960s, you know, we're talking about a time turmoil, yes, but also ethnic identity. You know, the African-American community, Black Power Black is beautiful was the motto, and we Armenians were also now part of that mix, that we were different and it was okay. It was okay to be different. We were beautiful, you know. So it was an exciting time, and I do remember this. So when I say that, you know, this was very special to me, I was basically bringing together two generations. Actually, my generation too. Let's say 3, 4, 5 generations. I was the monument, which was constructed for the generation of my grandparents who were survivors, but their families were wiped out in the genocide. And the subsequent generation, my parents' generation, who built from nothing and made something, made our lives here today. My generation, my children, and now my children's children, who happened to be there yesterday. So, you know, we're bringing together like 5 generations, and I'm standing there in the middle and asked to offer a prayer, and I did. I'll put a link on today's show notes to the prayer. I think I heard that Aspare's newspaper was recording it. I haven't seen the recording, but if we find it by the time we publish this podcast, I'll make sure that there's a link in the show notes as well. I offered a prayer, and it was basically one of thanksgiving and also one of not only us remembering the past, but also speaking out about injustice and working for peace in our lives, which is a typical kind of Father Voskin thing when you think about all we've done. And this is where I told you I kind of realized why I wasn't able to do a podcast for the last 2 months, because I think I hate to say this. I hate to say this, but that element of hope is getting farther and farther away, especially after the last elections, having basically no choice of 2 candidates that were supporting an evil genocide that was taking place in Gaza, basically 2 candidates that were, you had to select the better of the two worst. I don't know how to describe it. I was disappointed. I shared a little bit of that with you. But after the inauguration, to see the new president and how he's just basically sweeping through, changing things so quickly. And those of you who know me, who've followed this podcast, know that there are a couple things that I consider sacred, and one of which hangs on my walls is this Declaration of Independence. So important. Democracy is not just about voting. It's not that everybody has a vote. In fact, I don't want everybody to have a vote. I want people who are educated. You know, one of the most important things in my life has been that exchange of ideas. Yeah, I mean, think about this podcast. You sit here and you listen to me. Why? It's an idea. I don't expect everybody's agreeing with me. Unfortunately, what's happened now is that, yes, we tune into podcasts that we are in agreement with. We don't listen to. Ask my wife what I listen to in the car. She gets upset. Susan gets upset that I listen to that stuff. But I listen to counter-programming, people who have different opinions than my own. I want to hear what they have to say. Yeah, I get frustrated. Maybe that's why Susan gets upset at me, because by the time I get out of the car, I'm just like, I'm a mess. I'm upset about everything. But no, I cherish that idea of exchanging ideas, of debating, of putting it out. And in that crossfire, I'll admit it, I learn a lot of things, and I hope others learn from me. You know, that's part of that discussion. To me, that's democracy. And I see that's just kind of like going to the side. And yesterday, while sitting there at the monument, this became even more pronounced. You see, the Armenian Martyrs Monument is a place. It's something that you could focus in on. You could look at it. It's inspiring. It's also a memorial. It makes you go back. It's a contemplative place. It's a place, to me, I said it yesterday in my prayer. I said it's a sacred space, and I believe that. It was interesting because one of the politicians, the senator who authored the bill to make it a historic landmark, gets up and he says, oh, yes, it's a sacred place. He says, how about if we refer to this as Mount Montebello. He said this a few times and everybody's cheering and everything. I mean, he knows that Montebello means beautiful mountain. So what is the redundancy there? Mount, beautiful mountain? It's like weird. It was weird, but you know what? It brought the point home. This guy wasn't there to honor the past. This guy was there because it's votes. And let's be really, really, really realistic about it. Yeah, there's a lot of people who do good things. I'm not discounting that. But there is a motive in there. And maybe it's that motive that propels them to do that. But I just saw it. It was too pronounced yesterday. So we're sitting there with an assortment of different people from different walks of the government. In other words, this is the senator. So the way it works here in the United States, we have a city. The Montebello is the city. It belongs to a county, Los Angeles County. The county belongs to the state of California. And the Senate, that senator that I mentioned, he was from the state of California. And that state, of course, belongs to the United States. But in this case, California happens to be the fifth largest economy in the world. Not only huge in America, but the fifth largest in the world. So I don't know who the people before us are. I imagine it would be the United States itself, China, Russia, India, maybe, probably. I don't know. I don't know who the four others are, but you know, it's easily Googled. You can do that. But that's how our government is set up over here. That's the pecking order, so to speak. And so here we are in Montebello, and we are recognizing this place as a historic landmark. In other words, now it becomes California recognized, and it will be funded so it could be cleaned up and it could be taken care of into the future. And now we have different generations that will be able to access this monument. And it's a beautiful, beautiful monument. The thought of the monument is beautiful. But all of a sudden, yesterday, we're standing there and it was desecrated by the words of these people. They got up and they started talking about themselves. They started talking about how great they were, what we did to make this happen. We had coalitions. Yes, I'm an Armenian, and I sat with the Latino, and we had these different, what are they called? Caucuses within the Senate, and we talked about this and that. You know what it reminded me of? The Jesus' parable about the rich fool and how many times he said the word I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll say to myself, you have done well. You've made money. Tear down the walls and build bigger walls. Yeah, it was just like sitting there and listening to egos talking to one another. And that's where I think I lost it, I have to tell you. And I said to myself that day, I said, now I know why I can get on in front of the microphone and talk to my Next Step audience. Because that's what I've lost. In the last 2 months, this is what's happened. I've kind of like lost hope. And that's not a good thing, because you should live with hope. It's the one thing that we do have. But everywhere you're looking, it's this kind of idea that somehow we are important and as individuals, and the community is second. I was insulted yesterday because that monument stands as a testimony to the lives of 1.5 million Armenians that lost their lives, that were murdered barbarically. They were killed, and they are remembered in our prayers and in structures such as this monument. You can't make that into a political arena. And that's what it became. It became a political arena where we were talking about the governors and the mayor came in and everybody tipped their hats. And then they said the one thing that probably triggered me. Are you ready for it? They said, this monument has to stand so that genocide will never happen again. Okay, folks, those of you know where I'm at. Take a break right now. Let's take a little breather, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to be blasting away, okay? Here's today's song of the day. Enjoy.
When you're falling awake and you take stock of the new day, and you hear your voice croak as you choke on what you need to say, well, don't you fret, don't you fear, I will give you good cheer. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. If you wait, then you play it. I will feel as the verses unfold and your soul suffers the long day. And the 12 o'clock gloom spins the room. You struggle on your way. Well, don't you sigh, don't you cry, lick the dust from your eye. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. We will meet in the sweet light of dawn as the Baker Street train fills your pain all over your new dress. And the symphony sounds underground, but you wanted you a rest. Well, don't you squeal as the wheel grinds you under the wheels. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. But the tune ends too soon for the song.
Life is a Long Song, 1972, off of a Jethro Tull album called Living in the Past. One of my faves. I can't remember playing it. I have to look that up. I don't think we've played that in all these years. That is the original version, Life's a Long Song. Something that kind of hooked me when I was, what was it? How old was I then? Maybe 16, yeah, I guess. Those formative years in high school when you're starting to think about what this is all about. and maybe doing a little too much thinking. Life's a long song, but the tune ends too soon for us all. Says the author, Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, one of my favorites. I hope you enjoyed it. Back to the show. So I'm talking about why we waited to do the 800th edition. A couple months have passed by since the time that it should have come out, and I shared with you an episode that took place yesterday at the Armenian Genocide Memorial here in Southern California, more affectionately known as the Montebello Martyrs Monument. Actually, that was the original name of it. And if you look it up, that's what it says on maps and everything. Of course, maps are being changed too now. We have the Gulf of America. And I noticed that yesterday was called the Armenian Genocide Memorial, which is, hey, if it works for me, you know, that's good, right? So I was happy about that. I was happy to see that it was that the word genocide was used. What I wasn't happy about was that how it got politicized, and people were talking about, you know, their contributions to make this happen and plauding those contributions. Meanwhile, there's 1.5 million people who lost their lives. 1.5 million people who were also canonized and became saints. And so we no longer need to think about victimization as much as being victors, victors in Christ. And what that means to us is that we now have the power to get over that self-doubt, that self-knocking, and saying, hey, we are something to be reckoned with. If Christ has recognized us, who can be against us, right? That's what happened yesterday. I heard speaker after speaker talking about, we will never let this happen again. Artsakh, this happened in Artsakh. We will never happen again. And this is where the point of hopelessness came in. Because as they're talking, you're thinking, wait a minute. What are you guys talking about? We won't let this happen. That was the tipping point for me. Of course, we don't want to let it happen. The Jews say it always, right? Never again, right? But what did they do? There was a genocide in Gaza. Before there was a genocide in Gaza 3 years ago, there was a genocide and still is going out in Africa. Whether it's in Darfur, whether it's in the Congo, and right now I hear that, yeah, in the Congo, it's again, the Tutsis are involved in it. And genocide is something that continues to go on, and we're not doing anything about it in full view. Okay, now look, the Congo and Darfur, I've been on that Darfur campaign since 2003. And I thank God we have this next step, because that's where we started from. There's this video that I put up. It was called Leveraging Love. If you haven't seen it, see it. It is exactly where I was in the early 2000s with Darfur going. What can we as Armenians do? What is that? Basically, that's where we started the next step. What is the next step for us as Armenians? What is our next step? And I put out a proposal out there. I put out a proposal to be discussed, that we as Armenians need to care about others besides ourselves. If we want others to care about us, we need to care about others. What Armenian got up and said anything about Darfur? I went out to Rwanda. I sat with people who had been through genocide in the middle of Africa. I spoke with them, and I saw a resolution taking the idea of forgiveness. And so when we did the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, I was put in charge of it. You know, Gregory Baylarian, who heads our Apostle, he's the creative director at Apostle. Him and I went out on campaign. We went through entire Los Angeles area dealing with children, with kids who were in the school systems, both private as well as public. And a basic kind of challenge for us, challenge for us, we didn't put the challenge on anybody else, was how do you talk about the genocide without inciting more hatred? Like, how can you talk about it that the Turks did this horrible thing without inciting more hatred towards Turks, which will incite more violence, and it's a perpetual cycle. And we saw that happen right now. We saw Hamas attacking into Israel. The Israeli, the Jewish code says an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. They took 1,000 people, but no, the Jews went with their own. They're not going to tolerate it anymore. And what is it now? 40,000 people? 50,000 people were killed? And the entire idea was, let's go after the Palestinians, let's get them out. And now we've got Trump who's getting up and he's saying, we're going to make a Riviera. And they ask him, under whose authority? He says, under mine. Under my authority. Who's going to challenge me? And seeing all this happening, I'm just like going, like, what happened to that idea of civility? What happened to the idea of us helping one another? This is where that hopelessness began. And I'm hearing it yesterday, speaker after speaker who gets up and says, we will never let this happen again. It happened! It happened on your watch! It's happening right now. What are you guys talking about? Are you able to stand up right now and say that this is wrong? I got up at the Diocesan Assembly and I was shot down. We as Armenians have an obligation to talk about genocide when we see it happening to others. No, it was too controversial for them. They didn't want to take a stand. I shared with you, one lady even came up to me and said, you know, do you know who the Palestinians are? I've lived with them in Lebanon, in Beirut. Wherever they go, these were her words. She challenged me. She goes, why are you defending the Palestinians? I'm not defending Palestinians. I'm defending people who are being killed, defending children who are being killed. She turns to me and she goes, why are you defending the Palestinians? Don't you know what they do? Wherever they've gone, they're dirty people. They've destroyed the towns. I've lived in Lebanon. It was fine. It was a beautiful country till the Palestinians came and they destroyed and everything. And I turned to her and I go, do you know who you sound like? I said, this is exactly what the Turks said about us. Turkey, where our lands were beautiful until the Armenians came. This is what Azerbaijan is saying right now. Supposedly the lands are theirs and we came and we destroyed. We built these beautiful churches. No, but we built it for them. It's just bizarre, bizarre logic. How do you talk about these things without inciting more hatred? And once you do talk about them, how real should those vows be? And so yesterday, the applause was thunderous every time they said, we will never let this happen again. But we have. We are letting it happen again. That's when I decided that I've got to come and do episode number 800 for two reasons. One of them, first of all, to apologize to you why I haven't gotten this next step out. Second, to share with you my pain and my grief of that hopelessness. But the real reason is the final reason, and that is if we don't talk about it, if I don't say it here on the next step, as a priest, not of just the Armenian Church, as a priest of the Church of Christ, Jesus Christ's body. And I always go back to this basic statement that was made popular several years ago. What would Jesus do? I just turn around and I say, who would Jesus bomb? If Jesus were sitting in a plane with a bomb load on it, who would he bomb? Who would he kill? Nobody. They're all his children. They're all his children. This is ridiculous, this idea that there are superiority among the different countries and the races, and this is how genocide begins. And if anybody's going to stop it, it has to be a level-headed person who's talking about the Christian message of equality. That's where Christ comes in. This is not a political issue. I see what the politics do. I saw what the politicians did throughout my life, and I saw it yesterday especially.
were sitting there at this sacred event on the sacred hill and his politicians applauding one another. And you know what was sad about it? There was a group that came from the Mesrobian High School. It was one of the first high schools. It was right after Ferahian. It became the second, I think. The second high school in the United States, Armenian High School. And the kids were there yesterday, some 60 years after its formation as a high school. And their latest, I think it was the graduating class. I'd say maybe about 50 kids were there from their high school. And what's sad is that this is what they're getting indoctrinated with. This idea that we are losers and all we can do is we can care about ourselves and we have to remember genocide for the sake of genocide so that it'll never happen again. But you have absolutely nothing to do with it. No, you do have something to do with it. And so if anything, yesterday, it kind of got me back up. It got me back up out of that slump that I was in of hopelessness. I realized that somebody's got to talk. The next step has a value. At number 800, we're recommitting ourselves that there is a next step. And that next step is not the same step that you're going to be taking. It has to be innovative. It has to be fresh. It has to be a new step. That's how we started Next Step, and that's how we're taking it at year 2025. What is this now, the 17th year that we've been producing? Yeah, up until last year, we were doing every week. Now we got out of that habit. We're going to get back into it, okay? Be a little patient with me. It may take me a few weeks to reorganize, but I would love to hear from you. Tell me what you think, and tell me where I'm at with this, because it was really a wake-up call yesterday in many ways. It reminded me of where we were. It made me sad that we were still there. But it also reminded me that if not us, then who? If not, we're not the ones who are talking about it. And by us, it's not about Armenians. It's about a Christian message of unity, of talking about world peace, talking about ourselves beyond the politics. It's the John Lennon dream, if you want to call it. And it's his imagination. Imagine there's no country. Imagine there's no religion. There's nothing to live or die for. Just a brotherhood of men. Yes, that's an imagine. But it's possible. It's no different than when Jesus said, when he said, seek first God's kingdom, and all else will fall into place. Well, what is that God's kingdom? It is that peace on earth, goodwill towards one another. That's what he ushered in. When Jesus Christ came, he brought the kingdom of God to earth. That's what we believe the church is. The presence of Christ, the kingdom of God on earth. Mistakenly, through the centuries, people have ascribed it to something that's going to happen in the future. No! What was John the Baptist's message? Prepare the way of the Lord. The kingdom is here. It's coming. Jesus Christ came. He read in the synagogue on his first time after baptism, after 40 days in the wilderness. He goes into the synagogue, and what does he read? He says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. I have come here to preach to the poor, to give recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who've been oppressed, to heal the brokenhearted. Think about that. He has been brought here. That's the kingdom. And then he closes the book and he looks at the people. He says, in your presence, this has come to pass. This has happened. In your presence. And that same message is now being continued. Every priest who is ordained within our Armenian church has that passage. And I call that the Luke 4:18 manifesto. It's the manifesto of what the Christian church is all about. It should be about. Because when he says that I'm here to give the good news to the poor. It's not about the poor people who have no money in their pockets. Yes, that those are poor physically, but how about the poor emotionally, the poor spiritually, the people whose pockets are lined? Yeah, we always talk about tending to the poor. Have you ever talked about ministry to the rich? That how off the line they are and they need that ministry. We have to think about that too. The blind, who are the blind? He says, I've come to give sight to the blind. People who have eyeballs in their sockets but can't see the beauty of life because they're so consumed with that struggle of making more and getting more, building the bigger barns and tearing down the old ones until all of a sudden you realize that, you know, hey, God is calling me, and it's not about that. That's what the next step has been about. And so I'm back into action, okay? Number 800 of the next step. It's now official. We're moving forward. We are taking the next step. I'd love to hear from you. Please drop me a line, okay? Here's Susie. I'll be back in a couple of moments.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazquez, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that message. And thank you to all of you for your little notes and your little comments that keep me going. And like I said, it took me a little bit of time, but I'm like fired up. Nothing like a little bit of a catalyst going in the other direction to fire you up the way it did today. You know, Malcolm X has something really special that he said. I just happened to have read it this morning. It's the idea that, you know, at the end of the day, these negative things, these bad things that happen to us, these are opportunities for us to grow, for us to move forward with. And I think this is what happened yesterday. Yes, I was so thankful, first of all, to Archbishop Hovland, who gave me that chance to offer that prayer and invited me there, because it was really what I needed to see that, you know, if we are not that counter voice, there's nobody else who's going to be talking about it. By the way, in the speeches that they gave them from the Armenian side, were the same old, you know. We've been victimized, and we are, you know, we had a horrible history. We've been victimized, and why doesn't anybody listen to us? And, you know, the same old, same old. I heard that 50 years ago. I heard it yesterday again. Anyway, we have to be that other voice. That's what you're supporting when you support ePostle. So, as Susie mentioned, and I'll mention it again, please be generous in your offering. ePostle.net, you'll find daily messages. It's more of a spiritual nature, but you'll also find these next steps from day one. They're all archived over there. Find all kinds of stuff at ePostle. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic Word. ePostle.net. Okay, that does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it, and thank you very much for listening. On behalf of Susie, my producer, and myself, this is Father Vazquez. Looking forward to seeing you again very soon as we take the next step.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.
Forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.